A room opening on the garden and park of a very large country house in Derbyshire in April 1809. Thomasina Coverley is at her lessons with her tutor, Septimus Hodge. On the table they share with writing books and primers, Septimus's tortoise, Plautus, serves as his paperweight while he reads a brand new quarto volume. And while Thomasina's thoughts stray from her algebra,
Septimus, what is carnal embrace?
Carnal embrace is the practice of throwing one's arms around a side of beef.
Is that all?
No. A shoulder of mutton, a haunch of venison, well hugged, an embrace of grouse. Caro, carnis, feminine, flesh.
Is it a sin?
Not necessarily, my lady, but when carnal embrace is sinful, it is a sin of the flesh. QED. We had caro in our Gallic Wars. The Britons live on milk and meat. Lacte et carne vivunt. Sorry that the seed fell on stony ground.
That was the sin of Onan, wasn't it, Septimus?
Yes, he was giving his brother's wife a Latin lesson, and she was hardly the wiser after it than before. I thought you were finding a proof of Fermat's last theorem.
It's very difficult, Septimus. You'll have to show me how.
If I knew how, there'd be no need to ask you. Fermat's last theorem has kept people busy for 150 years. I hoped it would keep you busy long enough for me to read Mr. Chater's epic poem in praise of love, but only the distraction of its own absurdities.
Oh, Mr. Chater has written a poem.
He believes he has written a poem, yes. I can see that there might be more carnality in your algebra book than in Mr. Chater's couch of Eros.
Oh, it was not my algebra. I heard Jellaby telling Cook that Mrs. Chater was discovered in carnal embrace in the gazebo.
Really? Mm-hmm. With whom, did Jellaby happen to say?
What do you mean, with whom?
With what? Exactly so. The idea is absurd. Where did this story come from?
Mr. Noakes.
Mr. Noakes?
Papa's landscape gardener. Now, he was taking bearings in the garden for his alterations to the park when he saw, through his spyglass, Mrs. Chater in the gazebo in carnal embrace.
And do you mean to tell me that Mr. Noakes told the butler?
No, Mr. Noakes told Mr. Chater. Jellaby was told by the groom who overheard Mr. Noakes telling Mr. Chater in the stable yard.
Mr. Chater being engaged in closing the stable door.
What do you mean, Septimus?
So, thus far, the only people who know about this, Mr. Noakes, the landscape architect, mm-hmm. the groom, mm-hmm. the butler, the cook, and, of course, Mrs. Chater's husband, the poet.
And Arthur, who's cleaning the silver, and the boot boy, and now you.
Of course. What else did he say?
Mr. Noakes.
No, not Mr. Noakes. Jellaby. You heard Jellaby telling the cook.
Cook hushed him almost as soon as he started. Jellaby did not see that I was being allowed to finish yesterday's upstairs rabbit pie before I came to my lesson. I think you've not been candid with me, Septimus. A gazebo is not, after all, a meat larder.
I never said my definition was complete.
Is carnal embrace kissing?
Yes.
And throwing one's arms around Mrs. Chater.
Yes. Now, Fermat's last theorem...
I thought as much. I hope you're ashamed.
Aye, my lady.
Well, if you do not teach me the true meaning of things, who will?
Ah, yes, I am ashamed. Carnal embrace is sexual congress, which is the insertion of the male genital organ into the female genital organ for purposes of procreation and pleasure. Fermat's last theorem, by contrast, asserts that when X, Y, and Z are whole numbers each raised to the power of N, the sum of the first two can never equal the third when N is greater than 2. Nevertheless, that is the theorem.
It is disgusting and incomprehensible. Now, when I'm grown to practice it myself, I shall never do so without thinking of you.
Thank you very much, my lady. Was Mrs. Chater down this morning?
No. Tell me more about sexual congress.
There's nothing more to be said about sexual congress.
Is it the same as love?
Oh, no. Much nicer than that. I'm teaching, Jellyby.
Beg pardon, Mr. Hodge, but Mr. Chater said it was urgent you receive his letter.
Very well. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chater asked me to bring him your answer.
My answer? Well, my answer is that as is my custom and my duty to his lordship, I am engaged in the education of his daughter until 11:45. When I am done, and if Mr. Chater is still there, I will be happy to wait upon him in the gun room.
I will tell him so. Thank you, sir.
He must learn to keep his place. And meanwhile, his letter will keep mine in the pages of the Couch of Eros.
What is for dinner, Jellyby?
Boiled ham and cabbages, my lady. And a rice pudding.
Oh, goody!
What a snake in the grass is Mr. Noakes. He puts himself forward as a gentleman, a philosopher of the picturesque, a visionary who can move mountains and cause lakes. But in the scheme of the garden, he is as the serpent.
When you stir your rice pudding, Septimus, the spoonful of jam spreads itself round, making red trails, like the picture of a meteor in my astronomical atlas. But if you stir backward, the jam will not come together again. Indeed, the pudding does not notice and continues to turn pink, just as before. Do you think this is odd?
No.
Well, I do. You cannot stir things apart.
No more you can. Time must needs run backward. And since it will not, we must stir our way onward, mixing as we go. Disorder, out of disorder, into disorder, until pink is complete, unchanging and unchangeable, and we are done with it forever. This is known as free will or self-determination. Sit, Plautus. A restless tortoise will not do for a paperweight.
Septimus, do you think God is a Newtonian?
A Newtonian? Almost certainly, I'm afraid. Ask your brother to make this first inquiry.
No, Septimus, a Newtonian. Oh, Septimus, am I the first person to have thought of this?
No.
I have not said yet.
If everything from the furthest planet to the smallest atom of our brain acts according to Newton's law of motion, what becomes of free will?
No.
God's will?
No.
Sin?
No.
Very well.
If you could stop every atom in its position and direction, and if your mind could comprehend all the actions thus suspended, then, if you were really, really good at algebra, you could write the formula for all the future. And although nobody can be so clever to do it, the formula must exist, just as if one could.
Yes. Yes, as far as I know, you are the first person to have thought of this. In the margin of his copy of Arithmetica, Fermat wrote that he had discovered a wonderful proof of his theorem, but the margin being too narrow for his purpose, did not have room to write it down. The note was found after his death, and from that day to this...
Oh, I see now. The answer's perfectly obvious.
This time you may have overreached yourself. Mr. Chater, perhaps my message miscarried. I'll be at liberty at 11:45. If that is convenient.
It is not convenient, sir. My business will not wait.
Then I suppose you have Lord Croom's opinion that your business is more important than his daughter's lesson?
I do not. But if you like, I will ask his lordship to settle the point.
My lady, will you take Fermat into the music room? There will be an extra spoonful of jam if you find his proof.
There is no proof, Septimus. The thing that is perfectly obvious is that his note in the margin was a joke. To make you all mad.
Now, sir, what is this business that will not wait?
I think you know it, sir. You have insulted my wife.
Insulted her? That would deny my nature, my conduct, and the admiration in which I hold Mrs. Chater.
I have heard of your admiration, sir. You insulted my wife in the gazebo yesterday evening.
You are mistaken. I made love to your wife in the gazebo. She asked me to meet her there. I have her note somewhere. I dare say I could find it for you. And if someone is putting it about that I did not turn up, by God, sir, it is a slander.
You damned lecher. You will drag down a lady's reputation to make a refuge for your cowardice. It will not do. I am calling you a...
Chater, 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 my dear friend.
You dare to call me that? I demand satisfaction.
Mrs. Chater demanded satisfaction, and now you are demanding satisfaction. I cannot spend my time day and night satisfying the demands of the Chater family. As for your wife's reputation, sir, it stands where it ever stood.
You blackguard!
I assure you, Mrs. Chater is charming, spirited, with a pleasing voice and a dainty step. She is the epitome of all the qualities society applauds in her sex. And yet her chief renown is for a readiness that keeps her in a state of tropical humidity as would grow orchids in her drawers in January.
Damn you, Hodge! I will not listen to this. Will you fight or not?
Not! There are no more than two or three poets of the first rank now living, and I will not shoot one of them dead over a perpendicular poke in a gazebo with a woman whose reputation could not be adequately defended with a platoon of musketry deployed by Rota.
Ha! You say so! Who are the others, in your opinion?
Oh, in my
opinion. No, this goes very ill, Hodge. I will not be flattered out of my course. You say so, do you?
I do. And I would say the same to Milton, were he not already dead. Not the part about his wife, of course.
But among the living, Mr. Southey?
Southey? That I've shot on sight.
Yes, he has fallen off.
Huh?
I admired Thalabar quite.
Did you?
But Marduk... Oh.
Oh, dear.
But we are straying from the business here. You took advantage of Mrs. Chater. And if that were not bad enough, it appears every stable boy and scullery maid on the strength...
Damn me! Have you not listened to a word I've said?
I have heard you, sir, and I will not deny. I welcome your regard. God knows, one is little appreciated if one stands outside the coterie of hacks and placemen who surround Geoffrey and the Edinburgh.
My dear Chater, they judge a poet by the seating plan of Lord Holland's table.
By heaven, you are right. And I would very much like to know the name of the scoundrel who slandered my verse drama, The Maid of Turkey, in the Piccadilly Recreation.
The Maid of Turkey. I have it by my bedside. When I cannot sleep, I take up The Maid of Turkey like an old friend.
Well, there you are. And the scoundrel wrote that he would not give it to his dog for dinner were it covered in bread sauce and stuffed with chestnuts. When Mrs. Chater read that, she wept, sir, and would not give herself to me for a fortnight. Which recalls me to my purpose.
The new poem, however, will make your name perpetual.
Whether it do or not,
oh, it is not a question, sir. No coterie can oppose the acclamation of the reading public. The couch of Eros will take the town.
Is that your estimation?
It is my intent.
Is it? Is it? Well, well. I do not understand.
You see, I have an early copy sent to me for review. Well, I say review, but I speak of an extensive appreciation of your gifts and your rightful place in English literature.
Well, I must say that is certainly... You have written it?
Not yet.
Ah, and how long does it take?
Well, to be done right, it first requires a careful re-reading of your book. Both your books, several readings, together with outlying works for an exhibition of deference or disdain, as the case merits. I make notes, of course. I order my thoughts. And finally, when all is ready and I am calm in my mind...
Did Mrs. Chater know of this before she... Before you...
I think she very likely did.
There is nothing that woman would not do for me. Now you have an insight to her character. Yes, by God, she is a wife to me, sir.
For that alone, I would not make her a widow.
Captain Bryce once made the same observation.
Captain Bryce did?
Mr. Hodge, allow me to inscribe your copy in happy anticipation. Oh, Lady Thomasina's pen will serve us.
Your connection with Lord and Lady Croom, you owe to your fighting her ladyship's brother?
No, it was all nonsense, sir. A canard, but a fortunate mistake, sir. Mm. It brought me the patronage of a captain of His Majesty's Navy and the brother of a countess. I do not think Mr. Walter Scott can say as much. And here I am, a respected guest at Sidley Park.
Well, sir, you can say you have received satisfaction. Ah, Mr. Noakes.
Oh.
My muddy mettled rascal. Where's your spyglass?
I beg your leave. I thought her ladyship... I brought her my... Excuse me.
To my friend Septimus Hodge, who stood up and gave his best on behalf of the author, Ezra Chater, at Sidley Park, Derbyshire, April the 10th, 1809. There, sir. Something to show your grandchildren?
This is more than I deserve. This is handsome. What do you say, Noakes?
Oh, no, not the gazebo. Mr. Noakes, what is this I hear?
Not only the gazebo, but the boathouse, the Chinese bridge, the shrubbery.
By God, Captain Bryce, not possible.
Mr. Noakes will have it so.
Mr. Noakes, this is monstrous.
I'm glad to hear it from you, Mr. Hodge.
May I return now?
Not just yet.
Yes, let us stay. A lesson in folly is worth two in wisdom.
What is the topic?
Is Sidley Park to be an Englishman's garden, or the haunt of Corsican brigands?
Let us not hyperbolize, sir.
It is rape, sir.
It is the modern style.
Regrettable, of course, but so it is.
Mr. Chater, you show too much submission. Mr. Hodge, I appeal to you.
Madam, I regret the gazebo. I sincerely regret the gazebo. And the boathouse up to a point. But the Chinese bridge? Fantasy! And the shrubbery I reject with contempt. Mr. Chater, would you take the word of a jumped-up, jobbing gardener who sees carnal embrace in every nook and cranny of the landscape?
Septimus, they're not speaking of carnal embrace, are you, Mama?
Certainly not. What do you know of carnal embrace?
Everything, thanks to Septimus. In my opinion, Mr. Noakes' scheme for the garden is perfect. It is a Salvator.
What does she mean?
Salvator Rosa, your ladyship, the painter. He is indeed the very exemplar of the picturesque style.
Hodge, what is this?
She speaks from innocence, not from experience.
You call it innocence? Has he ruined you, child?
Answer your uncle.
A ruined child, different from a ruined castle.
On such questions, I defer to Mr. Noakes.
A ruined castle is picturesque, certainly.
That is the main difference. I teach the classical authors, Captain Bryce. If I do not elucidate their meaning, who will?
As her tutor, you have a duty to keep her in ignorance.
Do not dabble in paradox, Edward. It puts you in danger of fortuitous wit. Thomasina, wait in your bedroom.
Yes, Mama. I did not intend to get you into trouble, Septimus. I'm very sorry for it. It is plain that there are some things the girl is allowed to understand, and these include the whole of algebra. But there are others, such as embracing a side of beef that must be kept from her till she's old enough to have a carcass of her own.
One moment.
What is she talking about?
Meat.
Meat?
Thomasina, you'd better remain.
Yes, Mama.
Your knowledge of the picturesque obviously exceeds anything the rest of us can offer. Mr. Hodge, ignorance should be like an empty vessel waiting to be filled at the well of truth. not a cabinet of vulgar curios. Mr. Noakes, now at last it is your turn.
Thank you, Your Ladyship.
Your drawing is a very wonderful transformation.
Oh.
I would not have recognized my own garden but for your ingenious sketchbook. Is it not? Look. Here, on these pages, is the park as it appears to us now. And here, by the cunning of Mr. Noakes's superimpositions, we see the prospect as it might appear when Mr. Noakes has done with it. Where there is the familiar pastoral refinement of an Englishman's garden, here, as we overlay Mr. Noakes's fanciful cutouts, it is obliterated by an eruption of gloomy forest and towering crag, of ruins where there was never a house, of water dashing against rocks where there was neither spring nor a stone I cannot throw the length of a cricket pitch. My hyacinth dell is become a haunt for hobgoblins. My Chinese bridge, which I am assured is superior to the one at Kew, and for all I know, the one at Peking, is usurped by a fallen obelisk overgrown with briars.
Lord Little has one, very similar.
I cannot relieve Lord Little's misfortunes by adding to my own. I pray you, what is this rustic hovel that presumes to superpose itself on my gazebo?
That is the Hermitage, my lady.
I'm bewildered.
It is all irregular, Mr. Noakes.
It is, sir. Irregularity is one of the chiefest principles of the picturesque style.
But Sidley Park is already a picture, and a most amiable picture, too. The slopes are green and gentle, the trees are companionably grouped at intervals that show them to advantage. The rill is a serpentine ribbon unwound from the lake, peaceably contained by meadows on which the right amount of sheep are tastefully arranged. In short, it is nature as God intended. And I can say with the painter, et in Arcadia ego. Here I am in Arcadia, Thomasina.
Yes, Mama, if you would have it so.
Is she correcting my taste or my translation?
Neither is beyond correction, Mama, but it was your geography caused the doubt.
Something has occurred with the girl since I saw her last. Surely that was yesterday. How old are you this morning?
13 years and 10 months, Mama.
13 years and 10 months? She is not due to be pert for 6 months at the earliest. Would have notions of taste for much longer. Mr. Hodge, I hold you accountable. Mr. Noakes, back to you.
Thank you.
You have been reading too many novels by Mrs. Radcliffe, that is my opinion. This is a garden for the Castle of Otranto, the mysteries of Udolpho.
The Castle of Otranto, my lady, is by Horace Walpole.
Mr. Walpole the gardener?
Mr. Chater, you are a welcome guest at Sidley Park, but while you are one, the Castle of Otranto was written by whomsoever I say it was. Otherwise, what is the point of being a guest? Or having one? Well, the guns have reached the brow. Mr. Noakes, I will speak to his lordship about your sketches, and we will see by and by.
Bravo, sir. Your friend has got down a pigeon, Mr. Hart.
The pigeon, I am sure, fell to either your husband or to your son, Your Ladyship. My school friend was never a sportsman.
Yes, to Augustus. Huh. Bravo, lad.
Lady Groom, please.
Where are my troops?
My dear Mr. Hodge, your hand, sir.
I have grown up in the sound of guns like the child of a siege. Pigeons and rooks in the close season. Grouse on the heights from August, and the pheasants to follow.
Partridge, snipe, woodcock and teal. Pop, pop, pop. And the culling of the herd. Papa has no need of the recording angel. His life is written in the game book.
A calendar of slaughter. Even in Arcadia, there am I.
Oh, fooey to death. I will draw a hermit on Mr. Noakes's sketchbook. Hmm? For what is a hermitage without a hermit? Are you in love with my mother, Septimus?
You must not be cleverer than your elders. It is not polite.
Am I cleverer?
Yes, much.
Well, I'm sorry, Septimus. Mrs. Chater came to the music room with a note for you. She said it was of scant importance and that therefore I should carry it to you with the utmost safety, urgency and discretion. Mm. Does carnal embrace addle the brain?
Invariably. Thank you. That is enough education for today.
There. I have drawn him like the Baptist in the wilderness.
How picturesque. Oh, my husband has sent to town for pistols.
French windows.
Yes, open. Hang on. I'll put on my wellies.
Sod. Who was that?
My brother, I expect. Did he speak?
Speak? He just said...
My elder brother, Valentine. The best thing is, you wait here, save you tramping around. Hannah spends a good deal of time in the garden, as you can imagine.
Yes, why?
Well, she's writing a history of Sidley Park. I mean, of the garden. Didn't you know?
No, I knew she was working on the Croom papers,
well,
but...
Well, it's not exactly a history of the garden either. I'll let Hannah explain it. The trench you nearly drove into is all to do with it. I was going to say make yourself comfortable, but that's hardly possible. Everything's been cleared out. It's en route to the nearest lavatory.
Everything is?
No, this room is. They drew the line at Chemical Ladies.
Yes, I see. Did you say Hannah?
Hannah, yes. Will you be all right? I won't be long. Mr. Nightingale.
Yes, thank you. Miss Jarvis, is Hannah Jarvis the author?
Yes. Have you read her book?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I bet she's in the Hermitage. Can't see from here with the digger. I must say it's not favourite, the garden looking as if the drains are blocked just where the marquee is going to be.
Ah, you're having a garden party.
A dance for the district. Our annual dressing up and general drunkenness. The Brinkleys won't have it in the house. There was a teapot we once had to bag back from Christie's in the nick of time, so anything that can be stolen, destroyed or vomited on has been tactfully removed. Tactlessly, I should say.
Look, would you tell her... Would you mind not mentioning my name just yet?
Oh, right.
More fun to surprise her, would you mind?
No, but she's bound to ask. Should I give you another name, just for the moment?
Yes, why not?
Perhaps another bird. You're not really a nightingale.
Hello, I'm... Hello.
Sod, 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 sod. No. No. No.
She's in the garden looking for Miss Jarvis.
Where is everything?
It's been removed for the...
Dancer's all in the tent, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is the way to the nearest toilet.
I need the commode.
Oh, can't you use the toilet?
It's got all the game books in it.
Ah, the toilet has or the commode has?
Is anyone looking after you?
Yes, thank you. I'm Bernard Nye-ting, and I've come to see Miss Jarvis. I wrote to Lord Croom, but unfortunately I never received a reply, so
Did you type it?
Type it?
Was your letter typewritten?
Yeah.
My father never replies to typewritten letters.
Ah.
Have you seen a tortoise anywhere?
A tortoise?
Oh, there you are.
Where have you been hiding, Lightning?
So, I telephoned yesterday, and I think I spoke to you.
Me? Yes, sorry. You're doing a talk about somebody, and you wanted to ask Hannah
something. Yes, as it turns out. I'm hoping Miss Jarvis will look kindly on me.
I doubt it.
You know about research.
I know Hannah.
Has she been here long?
Well in possession, I'm afraid. My mother had read her book, you see. Have you?
No. Yes, her book, indeed.
She's terrifically pleased with herself.
Well, I dare say. If I wrote a bestseller.
No, for reading it. My mother basically reads gardening books.
Well, she must be delighted to have Hannah Jarvis write a book about a garden.
It's about hermits, actually.
Oh.
It's all right, Gus. What do you want? I'll take Lightning for his run.
Actually, we've met before. At Sussex, a couple of years ago, a seminar.
Oh. Was I there?
Yeah. One of my colleagues believed he'd found an unattributed short story by D.H. Lawrence, and he analysed it on his home computer. It was most interesting. Perhaps you remember the paper.
Not really. But I often sit with my eyes closed, and it doesn't necessarily mean I'm awake.
Well, but by comparing sentence structures and so forth, this chap showed that there was a 90% chance that the story had indeed been written by the same person as Women in Love. To my inexpressible joy, one of your maths mob was able to show that on the same statistical basis, there was a 90% chance that Lawrence also wrote the Just William books and much of the previous day's Brighton and Hove Argus.
Oh, Brighton?
Yes.
Yes. I was there. Mm. Oh, here she comes. I'll leave you to talk. By the way, is yours the red Mazda?
Yeah.
If you want a tip, I'd put it through the stable arch before my father comes in sight. He won't have anyone in the house with a Japanese car. Are you queer?
No, actually.
Well, even so.
Mr. Peacock?
Huh? Oh, hello, hello. Miss Jarvis, of course, such a pleasure. I was thrown from him. The photograph doesn't do you justice.
Photograph?
On the book. I'm sorry to have brought you indoors. Lady Chloe kindly insisted.
No matter, you would have muddied your shoes.
How thoughtful, and how kind of you to spare me a little of your time.
Are you a journalist?
No.
I've been in the ha-ha, very squelchy.
Ha-ha.
What?
A theory of mine. Ha-ha, not ha-ha. If you were strolling down the garden and all of a sudden the ground gave way at your feet, you're not going to go ha-ha. You're going to jump back and go ha-ha. Or more probably bloody hell. Although I think old Murray was up the pole on that one. In France, you know, ha-ha is used to denote a strikingly ugly woman. It's a much more likely bet for something that keeps the cows off the lawn.
And Mr. Peacock, what can I do for you?
Well, to begin with, you could call me Bernard, which is my name.
Thank you.
The book is a revelation. To see Caroline Lamb through your eyes is really like seeing her for the first time. I'm ashamed to say I never read her fiction. And how right you are, it's extraordinary stuff. Early 19th is my period as much as anything is.
You teach?
Yeah, and write, like you, like we all, though I've never done anything that's sold like Cara.
I don't teach.
No, all the more credit to you. To rehabilitate a forgotten writer, I suppose you could say that's the main reason for an English don.
Not to teach?
Good God, no. Let the brats sort it out for themselves. Anyway, many congratulations. I expect someone will be bringing out Caroline Lamb's oeuvre now.
Yes, I expect so.
How wonderful. Bravo. Simply as a document shedding reflected light on the character of Lord Byron, it's
Bernard. Bernard, you did say Bernard, didn't you?
I did.
I'm putting my shoes on again.
Oh, you're not going to go out?
No, I'm going to kick you in the balls.
Right. Point taken. Ezra Chater.
Ezra Chater.
Born Twickenham, Middlesex, 1778, the author of two verse narratives, The Maid of Turkey, 1808, and The Couch of Eros, 1809. Nothing known after 1809 disappears from view.
I see. And?
There is a Sidley Park connection. The Couch of Eros. Inscribed to my friend Septimus Hodge, who stood up and gave his best on behalf of the author, Ezra Chater, at Sidley Park, Derbyshire, April the 10th, 1809. I'm in your hands.
A Couch of Eros. Is it any good?
Quite surprising.
You think there's a book in him?
No, no. A monograph, perhaps, for the Journal of English Studies. There's almost nothing on Chater. Not a word in the DNB. Of course, by that time, it'd been completely forgotten.
Family?
Zilch. There's only one other Chater in the British Library database.
Same period?
Yeah, but he wasn't a poet, like R. Ezra. He was a botanist who described a dwarf dahlia in Martinique and died there after being bitten by a monkey.
And Ezra Chater?
He gets two references in the Periodical Index, a substantial review, one for each book, in the Piccadilly Recreation, a thrice-weekly folio sheet, but giving no personal detail.
And where was this?
Private collection. I have a talk to give next week in London, and I think Chater was interesting, so anything on him. All this Septimus Hodge, Sidley Park, any leads at all, I'd be most grateful.
Well, this is a new experience for me, a grovelling academic.
Oh, I say.
Oh, but it is. All the academics who reviewed my book patronised it.
Surely not.
Surely, yes. To a man, the Byron gang unzipped their flies and patronised all over it. Right. Where is it you don't bother to teach, by the way?
Oh, well, Sussex, actually.
Sussex? Nightingale? Yes, 1,000 words in the Observer to see me off the premises with a pat on the bottom. You must know him.
As I say, I'm in your hands.
Quite. Say please, then.
Please.
Sit down, do.
Thank you.
How did you know I was here?
Oh, I didn't. I spoke to the son on the telephone, but he didn't mention you by name. And then he forgot to mention me.
Valentine. He's at Oxford, technically.
Yes, I met him. Bride's head regurgitated.
My fiancé.
I'll take a chance. You're lying.
Well done, Bernard.
Christ.
He calls me his fiancé.
Why?
It's a joke.
You turned him down.
Don't be silly. Do I look like the next Countess?
No. You turned down a quick one behind the pavilion. The joke that consoles my tortoise lightning, my fiancée, Hannah.
Oh, yes. You have a way with you, Bernard. I'm not sure I like it.
What's he doing, Valentine?
He's a post-grad. Biology.
No. He's a mathematician.
Well, he's doing grouse.
Grouse?
Not actual grouse. Computer grouse.
What about the other one? The young boy who came in twice, took one look and turned tail.
Gus, he doesn't speak.
What's the matter with him?
I didn't ask.
And the father sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yes.
And the mother's the gardener. What's going on here?
What do you mean?
I nearly took her head off. She was standing in a trench at the time.
Archaeology. The house had a formal Italian garden till about 1740. Lady Croom's interested in garden history. I sent her my book. It contains, as you know, if you've read it, which I'm not assuming, by the way, a rather good description of Caroline Lamb's garden at Brocket Hall. I am here now helping Hermione.
Hermione?
The records are unusually complete, and they have never been worked on.
I'm beginning to admire.
Before was bullshit.
Completely. The photograph does do you justice. I'm not sure the book does.
Septimus Hodge was the tutor. His pupil was the Croom daughter. There was a son at Eton. Septimus lived in the house. The paybook specifies allowances for wine and candles, so not quite a guest, but rather more than a steward. His letter of self-recommendation is preserved among the papers. I'll dig it out for you. As far as I remember, he studied mathematics and natural philosophy at Cambridge, a scientist, therefore, as much as anything.
I'm impressed. Thank you. And Chater?
Nothing.
Oh, nothing at all?
I'm afraid not.
How about the library?
The catalogue was done in the 1880s. I've been through the lot.
Books or catalogue?
Catalogue.
Ah, pity.
I'm sorry.
How about the letters? No mention?
I'm afraid not. I've been very thorough in your period, because, of course, it's my period, too.
Is it? Actually, I don't quite know what it is you're...
The Sidley Hermit.
Ah. Who's he?
He's my peg for the nervous breakdown of the romantic imagination. I'm doing Landscape and Literature, 1750 to 1834.
What happened in 1834?
My hermit died.
Of course.
What do you mean, of course?
Nothing.
Yes, you do.
No. However, Coleridge also died in 1834.
So he did. What a stroke of luck. Thank you, Bernard. Here, come and have a look. Here, you see, the original sketches for the alteration to the park. Mm. There he is.
Mm.
The only known likeness of the Sidley Hermit.
Very biblical.
Drawn in by a later hand, of course. The Hermitage didn't yet exist when Noakes did the drawings.
Noakes, the painter.
A landscape gardener. He'd do these books for his clients as a sort of prospectus before and after, you see. This is how it all looked until, say, 1810. Smooth, undulating, serpentine, open water, clumps of trees, classical boathouse.
Lovely, the real England.
You can stop being silly now, Bernard. English landscape was invented by gardeners, imitating foreign painters who were evoking classical authors. The whole thing was brought home in the luggage from the Grand Tour. Here, look, here is Capability Brown doing Claude, who was doing Virgil, Arcadia. And here, superimposed by Richard Noakes, untamed nature in the style of Salvator Rosa. It's the Gothic novel expressed in landscape, everything but vampires. There's an account of my hermit in a letter by your illustrious namesake.
Florence?
What?
No, you go on.
Thomas Love Peacock.
Ah, yes.
I found it in an essay on hermits and anchorites published in the Cornhill magazine in the 1860s. 1862. Peacock calls him not one of your village simpletons to frighten the ladies, but a savant among idiots, a sage of lunacy.
An oxymoron, so to speak.
Yes. What?
Nothing.
Ah, yeah, here it is. A letter we have seen, written by the author of Headlong Hall nearly 30 years ago, tells of a visit to the Earl of Croom's estate, Sidley Park.
Was the letter to Thackeray?
I don't know. Does it matter?
No, sorry. Only Thackeray edited the Cornhill until 63, when, as you know, he died. And his father had been with the East India Company, where Peacock, of course, had held the position of examiner. So it's quite possible that if the essay in the Cornhill is by Thackeray, the letter it refers to also, sorry, go on. Of course, the East India Library in Blackfriars has most of Peacock's letters, so it'd be quite easy to, sorry. Can I look? Yeah, it's been topped and tailed, of course, but it might be worth. Go on, I'm listening. Ha ha. Yes, it's Thackeray, all right. Unbearable. What were you saying?
Are you always like this?
Like what?
The point is, the Crooms had the hermit under their noses for 20 years, so hardly thought him worth remarking, as I'm finding out. The Peacock letter is still the main source, unfortunately. When I read the Cornhill, well, it was one of those moments that tell you what your next book is going to be. The Hermit of Sidley Park was my
peg.
Epiphany,
that's it.
The hermit was placed in the landscape exactly as one might place a pottery gnome, and there he lived out his life as a garden ornament.
Did he do anything?
He was very busy. Very busy. When he died, the cottage was stacked solid with paper. Hundreds of pages. Thousands. Peacock says he was suspected of genius. It turns out, of course, he was off his head. He'd covered every sheet with cabalistic proofs that the world was coming to an end. It's perfect, isn't it? The perfect symbol, I mean.
Oh, yes. Of what?
The whole romantic sham, Bernard. Ah. It's what happened to the Enlightenment, isn't it? A century of intellectual rigour turned in on itself. A mind in chaos, suspected of genius, in a setting of cheap thrills and false emotion. The history of the garden says it all, beautifully. There's an engraving of Sidley Park in 1730 that makes you want to weep. Paradise in the Age of Reason. By 1760, everything had gone. The topiary, pools, terraces, fountains, an avenue of limes. The whole sublime geometry was ploughed under by Capability Brown. The grass went from the doorstep to the horizon, and the best box hedge in Derbyshire was dug up for the ha-ha, so that the fools could pretend they were living in God's countryside. And then Richard Noakes came in to bring God up to date. By the time he'd finished, it looked like this. The decline from thinking to feeling, you see.
That's awfully good. No, that'll stand up.
Thank you.
Personally, I like the ha-ha. Do you like hedges?
I don't like sentimentality.
Yes, I see. Are you sure? You seem quite sentimental about geometry. But the hermit is very, very good. The genius of the play.
Oh, that's my title.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course. Who was he when he wasn't being a simple?
I don't know.
Ah.
I mean, yet.
Absolutely. What did they do with all the paper, does Peacock say?
Made a bonfire.
Oh, well.
I've still got Lady Croom's garden books to work through.
Account books or journal?
A bit of both. They're gappy, but they span the period.
Really? Have you come across Byron at all as a matter of interest?
There's a first edition of Childe Harold in the library. And English Bards and Scotch Reviewers, I think.
Inscribed?
No.
When he doesn't pop up in the Croom letters at all.
Well, why should he? The Crooms don't pop up in his.
That's true, of course. But Newstead isn't so far away. Would you mind terribly if I poked about a bit? Only with the papers you've done with, of course.
Are you looking into Byron or Chater?
Sorry, just cutting through. There's tea in the pantry, if you don't mind, Muggs.
How kind.
Hannah will show you.
Let me help you with those books.
No, it's all right.
No. Oh,
thanks. I've been saving Val's game books. Thank you.
Sweet girl.
Mmm.
Oh, really?
Oh, really what?
Meant to say, don't worry if Father makes remarks about your car, Mr. Nightingale. He's just got a thing about...
Nightingale?
Oh, how was the surprise? Not yet, eh? Oh, well, sorry. Tea, anyway. So sorry if I...
You absolute shit.
The thing is, there's a Byron connection, too.
I don't care.
You should. The Byron gang are going to get their dicks caught in a zip.
Oh, really?
If we collaborate.
On what?
Sit down, I'll tell you.
I'll stand for the moment.
This copy of The Couch of Eros belonged to Lord Byron.
It belonged to Septimus Hodge.
Originally, yes, but it was in Byron's library, which was sold to pay his debts when he left England for good in 1816.